Companies need to understand that being active in AI is not a matter of improving their value proposition, but a necessity to stay in business in the future.
In health insurance, we see impressive AI use cases around the globe, in prediction, in customer management, in claims and provider management, but they are still isolated in different companies. The first company who brings all of this together will have an incredible competitive advantage.
This is Business Insights, a podcast brought to you by global strategy consultancy Roland Berger.
Welcome to today's episode of our Healthcare Insights podcast. I'm Thilo Kaltenbach, senior partner at Roland Berger, and with me is Carsten Neumann.
Thanks, Thilo. I'm also a senior partner at Roland Berger, focused on digital health. And today we are diving into our latest study, Future of Health, number 6, the AI Revolution or Evolution in Health. Will AI change healthcare through revolution or rapid evolution?
Yes, absolutely. This is a super important question, and that was the most important one in our study. Starting with the big picture, Carsten, is AI truly disruptive in healthcare, or are we just seeing an incremental progress?
Well, we made an international survey between managers in all sectors of healthcare, and the majority believed it will rather be an evolution. So we see some fields where AI is really advanced and almost standard of care, let's say in digital imaging analysis and in some other diagnostic fields. But regarding a real change of the system, so let's say independent care, autonomous AI, which guides patients and so on, we don't see that yet, and most people don't expect it anytime soon.
Right. So the transformation is fast but not uniform, and it affects every player in the value chain, from pharmaceutical firms and hospitals to insurers and medtech companies. So the question is, like, you know, how does it transform, you know, the different players in the healthcare markets? Can you elaborate a bit on your experiences when working with payers and providers and systems?
Well, I said there's no general revolution, but there are many innovative use cases around the world. Let me start with health insurance. That's a field that I know best. If you put it together, you get a number of interesting fields. There are players in the Middle East which already have huge collection of patient data and which run predictive models and warn patients and their doctors if there's a risk of the, or if there is a bad treatment. There are players in the US, for example, who manage their provider network with the help of AI. Several players from different sectors, including hospitals and even outpatient doctors, are working to build avatars, which will replace a doctor and or maybe even your personal doctor. So you have him or her for 24/7 counsel for at least light diseases. And of course, everyone is expecting more prediction models in the planning of care and in the individualization of treatment. How about the life science industry?
Life science industry actually is using it, looking into it since many years. However, I think the use cases that have been predominantly applied, you know, all the early on in the process, even the pre-COVID phase, was on R&D research, specifically also identifying new molecules very quickly in a virtual setting without having to use the expensive and lengthy lab procedures. So this works already very well. What we've seen and what we've worked on already, you know, also in pre-COVID or COVID times, was to extend this from once a molecule is identified towards, you know, how to get it into tested and get it into a clinical trial setup. Also how to develop the synthesis for manufacturing, the testing, the quality testing. So the reduction of lab time, you know, of more than a third and maybe at some point 50% is absolutely feasible. So this is where pharma industry, for example, is quite strong in. Where we see, you know, a lot of potential which has been untapped or rather untapped so far is in two further areas. One is in the supply chain area, which becomes more critical and important at this stage. Also, you know, looking at the geographic changes and tariff structures and also potentially new setups of pharma supply chains. Also looking into new technologies like cell and gene, which requires actually completely different and agile supply chain setups because they're working with patients very closely on both ends and in very short time frames. So this is an area where also a lot of companies, pharma and medtech, have a lot of issues that can be solved with AI. Another area where companies look into at this stage is in the commercial setup. One is pricing, for example. If you look at the tariffs that also impact pricing structures, but also reference price systems, also new evidence generated that would have an impact on price negotiations in different regions of this world. So this is also use cases and many plenty of use cases and which are calling for AI in the space. And then last but not least, although there some of the CRM systems are currently updated with AI, of course, still the most important interface usually is a person, is a medical person or sales rep really interacting with the prescribers directly. And this is something which needs to be supplemented at least with AI-driven information and AI-driven tools and channels. So this so-called omnichannel, which is around maybe for 20 or 30 years, has not really come into life in a very effective way in this new world. So this is what we're seeing in the industry.
Well, and then let's come to the actual caregivers, so hospitals, doctors, outpatient physicians, and all the other healthcare professionals. Here, the situation is a bit different because normally there are no large companies, so they cannot develop it on themselves. But we trust that it will be brought to them via the IT providers because all the producers of hospital information systems, practice information systems, as well as ERP systems for hospitals, they are slowly building in AI into their products. So we will have that. What you see, for example, when you see, a doctor's office, the AI application most used are the so-called scribes, so programs which help translate the doctor-patient conversation into an automated report. That's like a very simple thing. It's not medical. It's just an administrative help, saves the doctor time, but still important, and it will be the first step to bring AI into that world. And I think over the years we will see a lot more, but it will come more in the form of a standard software, and then hospitals, doctors, and others will have to adapt their processes to it.
That leads us to a question like, what is the impact on the patient along the journey? And, first of all, where do you think AI can make a difference for patients today already?
It will start at the very beginning of the journey when you feel you're at home and you just feel sick. And normally today you would call a doctor and try to get an appointment. And in the future, probably you will have a conversation with an AI tool with a kind of symptom checker, describe your symptoms and get some recommendation if it's urgent, if you can do something for yourself, if you can just get an automated prescription and stuff like that. Finland is quite far in that direction. And in Germany, we just got a new government and they have it in their coalition treaty that you will have probably digital first assessment before you get to the doctor. So that will be the first contact of patients with AI. And then hopefully, I think the large part will be in managing, in helping chronic patients deal with their symptoms, get answers to questions in the long months between their doctor visits, and have general help with adherence, with lifestyle management, but as well with coping with their disease.
So that a lot of what you mentioned is about early diagnosis or even prevention. If we're looking at the current discussion that we're having on the healthcare systems worldwide in terms of, how much of that is sick care in terms of when a patient is ill and gets help versus healthcare in a preventive meaning, how do you think could AI play a role, or will AI play a role also in supporting a shift, a step change in the systems, or how would you envisage that potential of AI?
Well, I would say one thing is certainly analyze patient data and have predictive models. In order to do this, you need to have patient data first.
Yeah.
You need to have good electronic patient records where you have clinical data or it's connected to trackers or something like that, right? And then there certainly can be a certain amount of prediction and early warnings. The other field, of course, would be help with general lifestyle and management of that. What do you think about this?
I mean, that's, of course, something which is definitely something which we have to look into, but that requires a lot of consumers' engagement. And we've seen that, what is in the public mind, very, very highly at the moment is, new results in longevity research, discussions around, nutrition, sports, and other behavioral topics, as well as also the new therapeutic approaches to longevity. I mean, for example, remember that discussion around the GLP-1 agonists. This is definitely something where there's a potential beyond the existing indications that would also have an impact on healthcare and health and also longevity. So I think from that angle, we will see a lot of we see a lot of interest at the moment with the not just the elderly but also the younger people who are very much excited about those topics, and we could see a lot of traction also coming in. And then of course always on the back of this, AI plays a major role in terms of measuring movements, measuring heart rates, measuring whatever you can do with the one of the, the watches today, and wearables, and then that will have an impact definitely. Where I see an issue is around bringing all these data sets together. How do you judge this? We have, in many systems, separated data buckets in terms of inpatient, outpatient, medication, pharma, and then also consumer data. So, and this is, around for many times, for a long time already. So how can you build a system which integrates all these data? Have any thoughts from your end?
Before that, let me maybe add one thing to the lifestyle topic. So my hope would be that AI manages to, let's say, get the motivational levers to address every person individually, because we are not very fine that. Today it's like you have your running app and you get a message like last week you did two activities and this week only one, which doesn't motivate anyone, right? So there's a lot of science on that, but it has to be very individualized to speak to one person and really get, let's say, where are their roadblocks, the preventive from healthy behavior. And I think AI could help there to really engage with persons and do very individual, as well. You mentioned elderly people, like sports for a 30-year-old is very different from an 80-year-old.
Yeah,
where it still makes sense to do sports and to move oneself. But of course, we have to be careful and it's different. So there, I would really have a high hope. Now, regarding the question of data, like it's a commonplace for good AI, you need good data. And we have a huge discussion over the last years if we do have to make an effort to have structured data, so well-defined data sets for each, let's say, area of the healthcare segment, or if we say AI is so intelligent, what we've seen with the LLMs, that you can have unstructured data, so a pile of PDFs, more or less, doctor reports, and we would trust AI will find their way through it. First step would be to get everything together, which means everything from the healthcare system, including clinical data. In Germany, for example, we have billing data, but we don't have all, let's say, blood values and so on. In other countries, it's better in that way. We need the health data. And then we need, of course, personal data, because there are many diseases where you need patient-reported effects, like you need a diabetes diary or depression diary and all that stuff. Or you have data from trackers, smartwatches, and all that. So yes, it's true, that has to come together. And I hope that there will be a way to work with unstructured data, because the whole definition of data sets takes a very long time.
Yes, and actually what we've seen in the past, there have been a lot of hurdles, specifically in some of the Western European countries, in terms of data production and data security. What are the biggest hurdles that you see at the moment for bringing all this data together?
Well, there's a great fear that it can be misused, that it will be hacks and so on. And there sure will be now. On the other hand, the question is, if something like that happens, it's like a robbery. It's forbidden, and then the law has to follow up and there has to be punishment. If you see the Scandinavian countries, they normally work already with large data pools. Take Denmark, Sundhed DK. That's the health portal. All the patient data go in there. Every citizen sees their individual data. Every doctor has the right to see the data of their patients. And it works very well. And it's much easier to get, for example, results and see what's going on in the population health, right? And of course, there is a greater potential for abuse than in German systems, but it's tracked and it's punished. So if a doctor looks into someone he's not allowed to look into, it is tracked and there's a follow-up. There are consequences. So we should think rather in that way than try to protect data too much.
Yeah.
What else do you see?
No, I see huge differences in the different geographies and also, you know, legal system actually for different, you know, regions, but also countries, even as you mentioned, within the EU even, yeah, where we have a overarching legislation, and then each country, you know, also has a very specific data structure, because healthcare is always and has been a sovereign field of each of the national governments. We see, you know, there's been a lot of movement as well in the past. We've seen in Germany these, you know, modifications in terms of how to execute on some of these EU legislations, which are also shared by the Scandinavian countries. So that's actually something where we all have everything in common, but we also see like other countries like the United States, America, or China, you know, with this regards also, you know, being more progressive and on a different level already in terms of using the data. So what I think is in the next step, and then also to think of, is like to understand a bit the different data ecosystems, what, you know, for example, we here in Europe can learn from China and from the United States, and how to bring the data together. Today, I think, you know, in some of these countries, like, for example, in Germany, this is still a huge task and challenge in terms of, you know, that the data is really, at the moment, still very fragmented. However, the basis is there. What we definitely see is, dynamics that, you know, are much stronger than they have been in the past towards this direction. There's one comment, and maybe we can add this to the lifestyle part earlier on, in terms of the role of prevention and AI in supporting consumers to be more active, to have good nutrition, to be, very much active in terms of movements and daily routines. I think this, has been around for a long time. I would expect AI having an impact on, better support, better data, also, you know, maybe finding the right moments to nudge, you know, different channels. However, for some of the consumers, what we've learned during decades, I think, is there's some you will never reach, right, with this, because, they just don't manage, for example, to lose weight, because they're already in a stage that it's really hard to do sports, very hard to hit the gym and or go running, and then those can be helped as well with therapeutics on the market, which also can be integrated into this overarching healthcare system, which is AI driven, and which also helps to detect those patients that need maybe even a stronger therapeutic support, and differentiating those patients who are still can do it with their behavioral changes in new routines. And that would be my 5 cents in terms of how AI could help in prevention. And last word on that, I think that AI, will play a role, as you say, in a second step, maybe once it is, the data is there and it's all fully operational, to shift from sick care to healthcare and preventive healthcare, which then also requires a lot of, other changes in the mindsets of the regulators, governments, and as well as the budget holders.
So who has to do what? What do the players have to do? What does the government have to do so that we advance in this field?
I think it's very important to share one data set. So I think all the players need to come to a table, and that needs to be probably orchestrated by the government, because they have the authority in most of the markets, to have the legal requirements and also the initiative set and the incentive set in a way that the data is shared. Number one. And number two, there needs to be round tables in terms of all these players that also agree on a common theme and the way that they would use and deal with innovations in healthcare in general. Also, based on the AI, so that, each side understands, the position of the others. And there will be always a trade-off between budget holders and spend and optimizing spend versus getting access to innovation. But I think, unfortunately, normally it's not, I think, our philosophy to always call for the regulator and the government. I think there needs to be one further shift in regulation after we've seen two periods before in Germany, for example. It would need initiatives from the governments to find the right formats and the right regulatory structures to enable innovation in AI. However, dynamically, I think we've seen already today each of the players are working heavily with AI, and the perspective and what we are discussing right now is how AI can immediately help the patient, which I think is the right discussion to have, at first. But I think in the second part of this podcast, we will probably also look into AI, how it will change the way organizations work. That's the second one. And I think these two are connected in a way that it has an impact on cost on both sides, like how if players can operate more efficiently, then you can also have an impact on actually administrative costs in the healthcare systems from a payer side or prices on therapeutic sides. So there will be a lot of potential also in these internal optimizations.
Well, I would add for the government part, they have to generate trust. What we've seen in our surveys on the topic was that the citizens are skeptical when you ask them for permission to, let's say, just collect data without a concrete purpose. Yeah. When you describe a concrete purpose, where you say, okay, would you allow to use AI to be cured from a disease? Like, the acceptance is much higher, of course. So it has to be clear what it is done for, and I think we need to have some good use cases to communicate. In Germany, for example, we are always skeptical of data, and there has been much skepticism about the electronic health record. I think once you see your electronic health record, see, I have all my doctor visits there, I have it with all the diagnosis, even with all the billing items, and so on, then the acceptance is much higher because you understand it has use. And we have to be careful not to forget about that, because we need the people to go along with this, and they need to accept it. Let's come to the companies, like to the players. Many of them are doing something already. Are they doing enough? What is key to gain, let's say, in this competition to be the most AI-supported company?
I think the message is understood. When I look at the producers, specifically pharma and medtech companies, the message is understood that AI will have a strongest part, for competitiveness in the future. And then the question is not anymore to use AI to have a competitive advantage, but to stay in business, actually. And this has been understood also, way back, and specifically in a pharma company, like 10 years ago, when it started to be competitive, because this is the way the industry still thinks, that the time frames are like 10 years, to develop a pharmaceutical drug. Everybody hopes it's going to be quicker in the future. And I think this is one of the greatest potentials of AI, to reduce that time frame significantly to something very, very much, towards a year or two. Like, it has been shown in exceptional cases in vaccines, for example, for during the COVID crisis. And we hope that there's going to be a new standard in the future. But right now, investment periods are more like 10 years. And then 10 years ago, we already had discussions with pharma companies that, already anticipated that they can work with probably a half or of the resources to have maybe twice of the impact in the future. The measures that have been taken is to identify the right use cases, as mentioned, for R&D, for example, where it can make a tremendous impact on both outcomes as well as on resources needed, and this has been started. I think what is still, and this is the transformational part, and as we, and I truly believe that this is, as we say in our study, and the outcome was in the study, it's not a revolution, because if it has been a revolution, then the old players now would be out of business, and maybe a new generation of biotechs would take over. This is not the case, actually. So it's more like a step-by-step process, but I think it needs to be accelerated, also will be accelerated in the future, and the new initiatives that will take place will be, you know, looking at the fully across the value chain, and would be more radical towards also changing the way companies operate. We've seen it in some cases, in some pharma companies already, you know, making huge cuts in their middle management and staff area, and also the way they operate and the governance, but we will see more of that in the future. In terms of healthcare markets and systems, industry is just one side of things. Can you elaborate a bit in terms of how other players in the healthcare system work with AI these days to change their organizations from within?
Well, if we come to health insurance, I would say many companies are in the middle of the way. So they have begun to install numerous AI use cases. They are building teams. It's still a bit, first of all, it's a bit decentralized. And second of all, we saw in our survey, most health insurance companies started with the customer interface because it was the most obvious thing for them to do it there, but it's not yet gone through the whole organization. What we will see in the future is people will start to think about how do I change my whole organization with AI, replacing, improving every process where it's possible, and have a much more efficient and effective organization. And then I do a centralized plan for that. What we are doing in some projects across different industries is helping organizations to bundle, to organize, to streamline the different AI activities, and to create synergies, create common platforms, technological and organizational platforms, so that they can go through the change much faster. And then when we come again to the providers, I would say for doctors and, let's say, smaller companies, it will be something which will come with the standard software. Larger hospitals will be able to do it. And here as well, we will see that they form clusters, because even individual hospital does not have enough data to really feed an AI. And they're building regional clusters to bring that together and to really have better data for research, etc. So it's still moving very much, and it will be a question of scaling and really gaining the necessary speed.
And just to add to this, I think this also includes, again, also the research-driven pharma companies, for example, or medtech companies, that, and we've seen some of the initiatives now really gaining traction in terms of that those clusters of providers also work with research players on the producer side to come up with faster development of therapies and really very unique breakthrough research, then can be tested in a very short time frame between the lab and the patient, and the patient back to the lab.
And then you have the human factor inside of the companies, of course, as well, because people have to adapt to this.
Yeah, that's definitely something, the human side of AI. So the question is, how is AI changing the jobs in healthcare? What's your take on that?
Well, there's an old, let's say, even 5 or 6 year old saying where people say, okay, maybe, let's say, the diagnosis will be automated, but there's the human side, and then this will be part of the humans. Now, some others have made the sarcastic comment that AI is sometimes even better at recognizing human emotions than the doctors, and doctors often are not so trained for that. But this will certainly be a part. But I think above all, people will learn to rely on the AI results and do the rest of the work much more efficiently and be able to treat more patients or to get deeper into difficult cases where the AI cannot solve it so far. Because we have seen as well, difficult cases, difficult diagnosis, that's not yet within reach of AI. So we'll start with the simple diseases. But it's good because this will free up resources for the other cases. But still, it will be a change, because you have the kind of narcissistic the feeling where something is taken away from me and I can do it better. But in diagnostic, in image analysis, AI definitely can do it better.
And interestingly, more than 80% of the executives in our survey said that the employees are open to AI. So this is fascinating because, you know, what we've seen in also in other industries, it's actually AI in the beginning is, of course, it needs to be trained by people. At some point in some areas, it definitely will also replace people, which is, I think, in many of our societies, not a big issue because, you know, many of our societies are lacking skilled labor anyway, due to demographics for the future. And so there's a tremendous also growth opportunity for productivity to use AI and then even replacing some of the jobs that may be also more repetitive and not the most evaluating. However, what I also see in the other side in healthcare is like where this labor gaps are really very, very evident and also having a great impact on the systems is on the provider side. And if you look at the provider side, I think what you need is AI, yes, and it helps in administration and diagnosis and makes doctors even more efficient or productive. However, at the end, it's also about a lot about care. Empathy, yes. We can, you know, discuss this lengthy discussion around, you know, who's more empathic. I like that idea. But it's also about physical interactions. So at the end, I think what needs to follow AI is robotics to be also able to carry out very physical tasks in healthcare or in elderly care, for example. So we all see now the robots around, you know, doing simple things and cleaning up in restaurants or whatever, the tables. You know, I think we're one, maybe less one, the one generation, but we are still a couple of years away from, you know, robots also taking over, let's say, the major work of nurses and in hospitals or in elderly care homes.
Yeah, it's funny. I had a talk with my hairdresser about that 2 weeks ago, where we said, okay, it will be very difficult to replace a hairdresser with a robot because you need such fine motions, and that will be true for the manual labor in healthcare as well, I think. And luckily so, yeah, like in many jobs. But I think it will be a huge change for the patients as well. You have to trust the computer and to see, like in many things where we now have automated systems, you have to sacrifice the human interaction for the convenience and some of the reliability. And of course, it will mean that we all will have infinite access to, let's say, doctor resources. Because when these avatars are there, and I've seen very good mock-ups, we'll be able to talk to doctors 24/7, if you like, and report every itch in our ear or little finger or toenail or something, and be able to get advice on that. But it will be from a computer, and that will be a huge change as well.
Yeah, I agree a lot to this. Maybe just to summarize our discussion a bit, you know, where do you see, you know, what are the recommendations for our clients? So what is the, let's say, whatever five-step approach that they need to follow to make a difference in AI and using AI in healthcare to the benefit of the patients as well as in their own organizations?
I would say be bold, because huge changes are possible. And if you don't do it, others will do it and be faster and more successful afterwards. Be bold. Think about changing your whole organization. Think about everything you can do there. And take your clients and your employees with you. And motivate them to really trust the new ideas and to implement them.
Yeah, and to add to this, I would definitely see put the patient or the customer to the center. I think this is always, you know, a paradigm, you know, which now needs to be followed, specifically when we work about with AI. And then reevaluate also your business model in terms of how does it work with AI? You know, what will be different? What will stay the same, as you said, like in the example of the hairdresser, or like in some of the, you know, surgical procedures, fine surgical procedures, or whatever stays is like empathy, like the discussion around a difficult diagnosis, for example, or therapy. That will remain. That's, I think, also a very important aspect because that helps you to build the core of your business model for the future outside AI, and then to see what AI can contribute. Empower your workforce. They should use it and embrace it. You know, and then also modernize your infrastructure in a way. And this is very hands-on IT, but at the end, the data, even if there's repositories out there, you need to access this data, needs to make sense out of the data. There's a lot of software changes that need to be done in the future. And then every company and organization needs to work on their IT infrastructure to make it happen.
That's a very important point, because we see that IT really is becoming the most important role slowly in each enterprise, because everything is based on IT. And you cannot build any more like cute little digital speedboats besides legacy IT. You have to transform the whole IT system so you can change it quickly and adapt to all the use cases. And that will be a huge change as well.
Yeah, and I think to summarize it all, is AI is happening now. Organizations need to take action today to shape the future of health.
So let's go on and let's start doing that. Great talk. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Business Insights by Roland Berger. Roland Berger is a leading global strategy consultancy. Our full-line service portfolio spans across all key industries and business functions. Established in 1967 in Munich, we are renowned for driving transformation, innovation, and business performance around the world. For more information, visit our website at rolandberger.com.